Hi, I'm Libby.
And I'm Riley, and welcome to On the Come Up. Hi, besties.
Hi, besties.
Welcome back to On the Come Up. How's everyone doing?
Hopefully good.
Yeah, we're chilling. We're excited to bring today somebody who's going to talk a lot about young professional development as well as their own development throughout the years, period. Which is super interesting. Obviously, all of our guests are pretty, you know, standard into one specific field, but luckily our guest today has lots of topics to talk about. Yippee. So we are so excited to introduce Jordan Egbert. Hi, Jordan.
Hey, happy to be here. First time you got me on the pod.
I know, right? Like, long time listener, first time on the pod.
Long time, first time,
period. So, Jordan, give us just a little bit of your background. Like, walk us through kind of growing up and, like, everything pre-college.
Ooh, pre-college. All right. So, I was born and raised in Toledo, Ohio, and Sylvania a little bit here and there, up through eighth grade, and then moved out to the middle of nowhere, Ohio, Cornfield, Ohio.
Shout out Gibsonburg.
Yeah, Gibsonburg, Ohio. I went to Eastwood High School, which is not in Gibsonburg, but like right next door. Moved away from the big city into the country.
Got a taste of both city girl and country girl.
I've truly felt all that Ohio has to offer.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah, and then, you know, did the high school thing. I did graduate high school, and
wow,
then
congrats.
I moved on and didn't look back, right?
Right, absolutely.
So did you know that you wanted to go to college, like, from high school?
My mom is a teacher. She works for Toledo Public Schools. And so it was always kind of like a highly supported expectation that we would go to college.
Sure.
It was one of those, like, you can do anything you want to do and dream big and do the things, but you're going to try college. And
yeah.
I was like, okay, cool, period. Yeah. That's the plan.
So how did you kind of choose which school you wanted to go to?
It was about money.
So
it was
fair,
what it came
fair,
down
yeah.
to, is scholarships. So I attended the Bowling Green State University.
Yes.
Go Falcons. Go Talons
Falcons.
Up.
I was about to say Talons Up. What's the thing that they do?
Yeah.
Y'all can't see me, but I'm doing the talons.
Yeah. Fingers are in the air. So I chose Bowling Green State University purely because I got a full ride scholarship. So I
love
was
that.
In something called the President's Leadership Academy. It's a 4-year leadership development program. It's a lot of work, but you get a lot out of it.
Yeah.
And so that was what it really came down to for me for school. And it was the best thing that could have happened to me.
Yeah,
like,
definitely.
And you've always been somebody who's like an overachiever. But the thing I think I admire the most about you is somebody who you take advantage of every opportunity you're given. So it's like you went to BG, but you didn't just go to BG. Like, you were involved.
No,
you were doing college.
I was Bowling Green State.
You were Bowling Green. Yeah, so share a little fun fact about yourself from Bowling Green of something
so
that you were involved in.
It's actually not embarrassing. It's my pride and joy.
Literally is your pride and joy.
I peaked in college, and I will admit that.
I can't stand you.
So I was Freddie Falcon.
Yes, Freddie Falcon.
My senior year of undergrad. I dabbled as Frida Falcon as well. You know, you got to do both.
That.
The versatility.
Got to try both, yes.
Yeah. So I got to represent our school behind a big, large bird suit.
Absolutely. And what an honor.
That's everything.
Truly.
So talk to us a little bit about, like, your at BG. How are you choosing your major? What's
right.
that kind of process for you?
Well, I started as a nursing major.
Okay.
I had, like, a 10-year plan. It was absurd. starting with nursing, I was going to become a nurse practitioner. I had plans to make big money, do all this stuff. Looking back, I don't fully remember why I chose nursing. Something along the lines of, like, I didn't want to be a doctor because that was too much school, which, whatever. but I wanted to help people. It was always about people. And I was like, yeah, nursing, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started nursing classes, and I was like, this is not it. I don't like this.
Right.
This is not fun. Yeah, my career, figuring out what I wanted to do was like a whole thing in and of itself for me. So basically, at some point, I picked up a minor in food and nutrition. I was like, ooh, that's cool. Like, I can minor in that. Like, that's pretty fun. And then that turned into my major. So I majored in dietetics in undergrad. So graduated with a bachelor's of science in dietetics, minored in leadership. Dietetics is basically like clinical food and nutrition.
I remember multiple times texting you, asking you questions about my dietary habits.
And I said, I am not licensed. I am not certified to give this advice. However,
like, please, as a homie, help me.
I was like, so this is what I would do personally, but.
You're like, no, for legal purposes.
Allegedly. Yeah.
Yeah, right. No, but I think it's really interesting that you've gone through so many different versions of your life and your plan and things that you've wanted to do, because I think a lot of our generation especially has really gone through that, like trying to find their path and changing things up. And so I think it's really cool that you have done that and had the experience with different course loads and all of that. So talk a little bit about what it was for you then switching from nursing to dietetics, but then also your plan after you graduated.
Yeah, so switching to dietetics eventually just felt like an easy switch. I loved my minor coursework in undergrad. I was energized by it. I loved the people I was learning with. I loved like the things I was learning. It was a really cool combination of science and just like food. Like you got, there was cooking labs and all kinds of like fun stuff combined with a lot of chemistry. and eventually I was just like, yeah, I'll make the switch. Like nursing's not it. I'll be a dietetics major. Continued on through that coursework, and I kind of realized early on that I did not want to be a dietitian either. But it was kind of too late at that point. So I realized I actually wanted to go into higher education as a field, which is where I'm at now. We'll get there. But I, through just my involvements on campus, so like I did everything. I was an orientation leader. I was a learning assistant, so helping teach in classrooms as an undergrad. I was in various student organizations. I was in the President's Leadership Academy. I was doing like all these things, right? Like I was the mascot. I did everything. I had the college experience.
Yeah. Right.
Like absolutely no regrets. That's why I say I peaked in college, and I'm okay with that, right? Like it was a beautiful time.
Which you didn't. Let's put on
no,
a PSA, but.
No, there is more beautiful things to come. However, it was a great experience in my life. And realizing that I wanted to go into higher education as a field through all of those involvements and all of those things, I was like, this is a job.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, I guess the people around me, like, guiding me through this stuff are getting paid. So,
right.
I knew that grad school was the next step. And at that point, I was like, well, there's no point in changing my degree program now because it doesn't matter what your undergrad degree is in if you're getting a master's degree.
Right. Yeah. So talk to us about that. Tell us a little bit about your master's experience.
Yeah. So I went to Kent State University, got a master's of education in higher education administration and student affairs. Specializing in equity and justice.
Oh, we're still going.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, it, yeah. Longest title ever. That was an amazing experience. My entire family is from like the Northwest Ohio area. Everyone lives within an hour of Toledo or less. And so moving a little over 2 hours away was like a big deal for me and my family. And I was out there on my own, but it was a beautiful experience. The faculty at that school, like I'm not trying to plug, but like the faculty in that program at Kent State were just amazing and supportive. I had amazing experiences while I was there for like my graduate assistantship, for my internships. Like, I left the field overqualified for entering as, like, the workforce as a full-time professional.
Wow, yeah. What more could you ask for?
No, truly.
I want you to talk to, I mean, first of all, I don't want to mince your words with the equity and justice specialization because that's very important. So I want to come back to that. But talk to me, too. You went on a pretty incredible study abroad trip while you were in your grad program.
Yeah.
So talk to me a little bit about that experience and what you learned from that as it pertains to not only your career, but also just your worldview in general.
Yeah, I was so fortunate. So like study abroad was like the one thing I didn't do in undergrad that I always wanted to do. I think everyone wants to do that, like if you had the opportunity, and it was just never in the cards for me with everything else I was doing. And so when an opportunity presented itself in grad school, I was like, I have to do this. Like I have to find a way.
Yeah. Right.
And I went not even knowing if any of the coursework was going to count towards the credit for my degree. And I was like, I don't care. I'm going.
Right. It did
work out for credit. Right. but the program itself. So I went to Rwanda, which is a very small country in Central East Africa. And we were there for almost a month studying peace and conflict. Well, peace and conflict studies was the program. Specifically, we were studying the genocide of the Tutsi from 1994. Really light stuff. But it wasn't just about that. We were talking about restorative justice, and we were talking about their homegrown solutions. So how this small country came back from losing over half of their population of neighbors against neighbors and family against family, right? How they came back, and it now visiting like is one of the most beautiful places I've ever seen. Experienced some of the friendliest people, most helpful people I've ever interacted with. Like I've been pretty fortunate in traveling, and Rwanda is one that I never thought I would go, and now like I I can't wait to go back. Like, I have to go back.
Wow, yeah, I'd imagine amazing. That's a pretty powerful experience to be there.
Yeah, it was amazing because to a certain degree, I was like, well, this will help me in my career. So, you know, looking at different cultures of the world, what they've experienced, what hardships they're going through, right? And I was able to kind of hone in my experience there looking at the University of Rwanda and mm-hmm. how their educational system, K through 12 and beyond, so higher education systems, all were reformed after what they experienced in the 90s. And so it was kind of cool that I could specialize my just few weeks there into what was going to matter for me. But even beyond that, just hearing the stories of these people who experienced tremendous loss, mm-hmm. of these people who went through really hard things and had to make really hard decisions because of what they were being forced to do around them.
Right.
Absolutely.
It was hard. Like, it was an emotionally draining trip.
Definitely.
But I think, like, changes you for the better. I went in and, you know, preparing for the trip, no one understood what I was doing. You know, people thought I was going on, like, a service trip with, like, a church. Right. Or they thought I was, like, it was, like, ministry work and all these things. I'm like, I'm not involved in any of that. Why would I be doing that type of a trip right now? Or, like, questions like, are you going to have plumbing? Are you, like, going to be able to, like, are there restaurants, right? And, like, there's amazing infrastructure. There's amazing public transportation in this country, right? Like, they have developed in a very different way than, like, the United States or the UK or things like that, but they have infrastructure. It's beautiful. It's clean. There are, like, service work expectations of citizens. Like, once a month, everyone in that country, like, spends a day cleaning the streets
that's
or
really
picking up trash.
Wow, that's really cool. So how did that change your perspective then on our country? Like, when you come back, I mean, what was that cultural shock like for you?
It was interesting because we called it Rwandan time. So no one was rushing ever. Mm-hmm. Like, for them, nothing was that important to not experience what's around you. So people are, like, everything they're doing in their daily lives, like, they're taking their time, they're experiencing what's around them, they're appreciating the conversations they're having, appreciating the meals they're having. You know, if, like, you're going to dinner, you're going to be there for, like, 2 to 3 hours. Mm-hmm. And, like, a good portion of that might be waiting for your meal, right? But, like, they take their time. And, like, that was something that just, like, we are not used to in the United States of, like, it's go, go, go. Like, mm-hmm. I've got an itinerary. I've got to stick to this agenda. Like, we have 1 hour to do this thing. And, like, that's not going to fly there. Like, that's just not how they operate. But teaching yourself to slow down like that is, like, a lot harder than you would expect.
That's probably, like, a perspective shift of,
for
like,
sure.
Whoa, like, just a lot. And, I mean, we've talked about that before, like, getting outside of our kind of hometown bubble and experiencing different things and kind of how that affects everything. But,
for sure. Do you feel like you have been practicing that slowing down nature?
Oh, yeah. My sister yells at me constantly. I like to say that I'm learning how to mosey.
I love that.
Learning how to mosey around a little bit.
I think I've always been moseying. I'm like, maybe my roommate can attest, but I think I got the moseying thing down.
Libby do love to mosey. She do.
But transitioning out of that, talk to us a little bit about what you're doing now. In your current work.
Yeah, absolutely. In my current work, I work at the University of Michigan. I'm a transfer program specialist in the Office of New Student Programs. All of that means...
I was going to say, give it to me like I'm 3 years old.
Yeah, so I run a transfer student mentoring program at the university. So first semester, brand new transfer students come in and they apply for this program. They get paired with a peer mentor if they're accepted into the program, and they spend a semester with their program doing social activities, academic preparedness, career prep, all kinds of different things that we think are necessary to help them build a community and make sure that they're able to stay at the institution. Beyond, and that's called Transfer Connections. Woot woot, love some TC. And then other than that, so like that's like the primary portion of my job. But I also do basically anything else out of our office that has to do with transfer students. So I helped to chair the Transfer Student Week celebration at the University of Michigan's campus this year.
Cute.
I helped plan like our transfer reception at the beginning of the semester. I work with our orientation team. The orientation programs come out of my office as well. And so I work with that team specifically on the transfer student orientation side, but also just generally wherever they need me.
Yeah.
Wearing very many hats.
Yes.
All at
always.
Once.
What about that job really called to you?
For me, it's the community building. So if you couldn't tell, was an orientation leader in undergrad.
What, you?
Me?
Seriously?
What?
Involved?
So I did orientation like my entire undergrad experience. I worked with orientation as a graduate assistant while I was in grad school, and I love it. I will never undermine the value of orientation programs for higher education and learning institutions. However, it is a very draining and very taxing experience mm-hmm. to spend every summer, all summer, going for almost 12 hours a day.
Right. Like, you really don't get a break.
Not much of one. So this job specifically was just, it called to me because it combined everything I love about orientation, and I knew I would dabble in it, but it was getting me more experience beyond that. And so I work specifically with transfer students and transfer orientation in grad school. And so yeah. I realized, like, this niche population is often underserved or mm-hmm. misunderstood on college right. campuses, and right. they have a hard time transitioning in. And you put that transfer student identity on top of any other identity they might be holding, whether that's a first-generation college student.
I was about to say, like, you know, you already are struggling as a transfer student to come in, but then think about how important orientation is for other students, like mm-hmm. first-gen students. Like, my mom was a first-generation student, and yeah. a lot of other people were first-gen college students. And it's just really – I can't even imagine that you're in the hot seat there, like, guiding these mm-hmm. kids through yeah. their experience. Yeah. That's so impactful for them.
Yeah, and the community building piece is huge for me. And so being able to work with a program whose sole purpose is to create a community and to help students foster a sense of belonging at an institution, mm-hmm. like that is my why, that is yeah. my stuff, that is what awesome. I do this work for.
You just want everyone to have a good experience. Just, like you did.
I just hope everyone's having fun. Like.
That, I feel like that really is the mission statement of your life. I just want everyone else to have fun.
Yeah, like, I just hope they're having a good time. Like, I don't think there's a right way to do college. I don't yeah. think there's a right way to do life. I don't think college is for everyone.
For
and
sure.
if it is for you, I don't think everyone's meant to have the same experience. Like, you know, I think of mine as the fully lived experience, and that's the way that some people want it and need it. Mm-hmm. Other people have what I consider a more transactional experience, where they're going to school to get a degree. They're going to go to class. They're going to do their work. They're going to get their degree, and they're going to get a job. And there's
right.
nothing wrong with that either.
Right.
But if I can do anything along the way to help any student that's coming through – yeah. understand that, like, no matter what your path and your journey is here, like, you belong here.
Yeah.
Like, this is your school. This is yeah. your home. You oh, belong here.
That's and so sweet.
I feel like I would imagine for someone who has bounced around a little bit, you've been to a few different institutions, you kind yeah. of know what is needed, like, what you would have wanted to have, I would guess.
That's, like, my mantra for life and for who I want to be when I grow up. I've always said I want to be the person I never had.
Yeah. Well, and I want to come back to that, too, because yeah. I have another question revolving around that, but we'll get there.
Uh-huh.
I am curious, you know, I think higher education to a lot of people who are not involved in it, and even people who have pursued higher education, might not know really what goes on behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
So is there anything about higher education or about your job with being a transfer mm-hmm. program specialist that people might not know?
You know, higher education is extremely bureaucratic. Things move so slowly.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many ropes and hurdles that you would never expect. If you want to get funding for a program, or if you want to create a program, or you want to put up a poster and market some events, you would not believe the requests you have to put in. You would not believe the reports you have to make.
Yeah.
And all of it's worth it, right? There's always a reason behind it. Do I always agree with the reason? No, but that's not my job. my job is just to do the thing and get it done, right? And so I don't think a lot of people understand that, like, we cannot just do whatever we want. Like, there mm-hmm. are institutional policies, there are divisional policies, there are federal policies, right? Like, there's a lot of things that we have to kind of, like, tiptoe around to, like, give this beautiful product that we're giving you. And
yeah.
even that product that we're trying to produce, right? Like, I run a mentoring program. Sounds pretty simple, right? But, like, I am looking at curriculum design. I'm looking at development theory. I am dealing with multiple different types of budgets to put on the programming and to make sure that my staff is getting paid and that I'm properly training and developing my staff and, like, all of these things, right? And so you're coming to a one-hour program where we're giving you pizza and we're talking about how to do academic advising. And in your mind, oh, yeah, that's, like, an easy job. But, like, you don't understand that, like, there were hours upon hours and weeks of preparation and intentional thought that went behind this tiny little event here
right.
yeah.
to make sure that you're getting what you need out of it.
Yeah. And so thinking back to you started as nursing
yeah.
to now you're here, a little bit of a difference. But do you think that certain skills transferred with you, or do you think it was a little bit harder to change gears?
You know, I always think that, like, my science background, that, like, kind of scientific mind is always really helpful for me because I'm very curious about things. Like,
yeah.
I want to ask questions. and then ask them again sometimes to make sure that I truly have an understanding, right? Like, I do like to test a hypothesis.
Yeah.
I like to see how things are going to work out. And especially in grad school, that was a large shift for me because a lot of the people I was in school with were coming from educational backgrounds or communications backgrounds or things like that,
sure.
where they just function differently. And they do class and school differently than you do when you're from like a STEM field. And so that was definitely a big switch. But I think like the skills are all there. If you want them to be, right? Like, you have to find a way to make your skills work for you. And, like, that's the biggest thing.
I love that. Marketing your own skill set is such a huge thing because it could be a very, like, STEM and science thing. Or it can be, you know, like, communication or leadership-based. It's just how you put yourself out there.
Yeah.
So I love that.
And it's an interesting conversation getting out of looking at different jobs or companies that might list the skills that they're looking for versus you as a person are then like trying to take that narrative and market your own skills instead of trying to fit into someone else's idea. And who knows, you might have a skill that they didn't necessarily list for a job that then could help you or help them as a company like down the line. I think it's really, really important for that. And I think that's a great piece of advice. So I want to come back to what you said about you want to be for people what you did not have, right? And I shock, guys, we have another queer person on the podcast.
Me?
I know.
What?
I know everybody shocked that we love having queer guests, but I want to talk to you about that. I mean, that was a huge thing for you. You were in an area that wasn't super accepting of your identity. And so coming out when you were younger in high school and then going through your life, I find it really important that you now are so unabashedly yourself. You are always presenting as who you are. You're ever changing, but you're effervescent. Like, you are always trying to be who you are. And so for me, I think especially the fact that you're working with young people who a lot of them might have grown up in these areas where it is not okay to be yourself and all of that. And now they're coming into a space where they're away from mom and dad. They're away from their grandparents or their caregivers or their peers who might have judged them. And you are that person. You are showing yourself fully yourself. So how do you feel about kind of being able to be a role model for some of these younger people who, you know, might be confused about their identity or might just need an outlet to showcase who they are?
It's terrifying, right? Like, it is a privilege. And like, I think about a lot, like the power that I hold in the position that I have, right? Like, even as like an entry level, first time, full time professional, there's a lot of power I hold in the work that I'm doing with my students and the things that I am able to do and the spaces I'm able to create. I always say that with my work, I take a person-first approach. You know, I have a staff of 12 undergraduate students and a grad student that I directly supervise. And I have told each and every one of them that, like, before you are a student, before you are an employee of this office, before you are anything else, you're a person.
Yeah.
And I'm going to acknowledge you as a person first. And I think that, like, that is just what a lot of it comes down to. I, you know, in high school was the first, I would say, openly queer individual. There were definitely other folks who identified somewhere in that community, and people maybe were making assumptions or guessing or whatever, but no one was really like out. There was just like a lot of like hush hush type of thing. I went to a pretty small high school. I had great support from my teachers, and like a lot of my classmates were great, but also a lot of my classmates were bullies, like straight up bullies.
Yeah.
And awful, and like genuinely wanted the worst for me purely because I was being myself. For me, going into college, I finally had this experience where like I had nothing stopping me. Like, there was no reason I couldn't explore, no reason I couldn't try different things and figure out who I am. And it was a little process of like trial and error, but I was given space for that. And like, that's what I really love about what I do. It's like, I, you know, I've been at the University of Michigan for 6 months now. I've been working with the core of my student staff for like what, like 3 months? Like, we're on week 13. So however many months that is.
Yeah.
And I've already seen like such development out of some of them of like seeing like they're away from home, they're settling into the institution, and they're like, they're changing like as people.
Right.
And like, that's not me. Like, I'm not doing that for them. They're doing it for themselves. But I make sure that when they're with me, when they're in the office, when they're in my staff meetings, like, they have space to do what they need to do, to say what they need to say. There have been a number of times where, like, I don't have a staff meeting. Instead, I'm like, hey, all right, so room's feeling pretty heavy today. folks are feeling pretty down.
Yeah.
What do we need to do? You know, what can we talk about today? Like, and they're, you know, sometimes we just spend half of our staff meeting letting each other complain about things that have nothing to do with work or school. They just needed that space.
I love that.
And so I really, like, I encourage that and push that, right?
Yeah.
Like,
and Do you find that that makes your team more productive, like allowing them to have that space?
I think so, right? Because, you know, these are, I'm working with 19 to 23-year-olds, right? Like a range of these undergraduate students. And I treat them like adults, all of them, right? Like, you're an adult, you are here.
Yeah.
You are young and have stuff to learn, but I don't care. Like, you were hired for a reason, right? I'm going to trust the fact that you are going to do your job. And I'm going to give you your space to do that.
Yeah.
And I'm really upfront about that, too, of I tell my students, like, I will give you a lot of grace. I will assume best intentions until you give me a reason not to.
Yeah.
So, like, if you have to change your schedule because something came up, I'm going to trust that, like, that's what's actually happening.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. As long as your work is getting done when I need it done by, you're fine.
Right.
Like,
right.
Do your job in the way that you need to get it done.
Well, and that's how it should be. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's great to put that person-first approach because you never know. I mean, people don't. It's almost like you're put in a position where you have to kind of explain yourself or justify yourself to your bosses or mm-hmm. your teachers or professors. And you never really know what's going on in someone's life. And you don't owe your employer that information
right.
like when you're struggling. Yeah. You don't have to just be vulnerable with them about what's going on. You can just say, I have some personal things I have going on that I need mm-hmm. to take care of. And so I appreciate that you're somebody who puts your trust into people and you focus on the people first.
And well, that is making me like kind of emotional, honestly, because it's like this is kind of the future of leadership and this is what we get to create for ourselves
right.
as Gen Z and moving forward, and that's really special and important to me.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Making sure that all these kids are all right, man.
Right? Well, and my staff kills it, right? Like I have had no issues,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Like I've had to have a couple conversations just of like, hey, like you've been out, not really been communicating that well, just like I need to know what's going on,
yeah.
right? And if that's the worst of the conversations I've had to have, like, they are meeting with their students. They're filling out these, like, extra long feedback reports that I ask them to fill out every time they meet with a student. They are getting these events planned. These events are successful. Like, they're doing everything that I'm asking them to do.
Yeah.
They're doing amazing. Yeah. We have an amazing product. Like, the program is thriving. And I just let them do it.
Yeah,
right?
I love that.
Like, I don't question them for it.
I love that. I think that's a great mark of leadership for sure.
And especially at such a pivotal time in their life where you are becoming an adult and it's like they get to keep that going too.
Mm-hmm.
It's really awesome. Yeah, yeah. I'm feeling hopeful about the future.
I know, right? Crazy.
So getting back to you, tell us a little bit about your long-term goals. What does this look like in the future for you?
I don't know what I want to be when I grow up still. I really don't know. Like, and I'm okay with that. Well, I'm trying to be okay with that.
Right.
Change is something that I have forced myself to become comfortable with because it's basically been nonstop since I was like in middle school. Like every couple years, something big is happening and something big is changing and I have to learn how to pivot and I have to learn what's next for me. And sometimes understanding, like, I'm not going to be entirely sure what that thing is. So for now, right, like I'm pretty happy working in higher education. Like I love my job. I love my students. And I'm heading in a direction with my career that I really, really like, right? And so, you know, working with my transfer students, I'm in that kind of community of belonging, right? And like, and building that. And that's really where I want to go with my degree and with the field of higher education is I want to work within equity and belonging and community building. And there's so much space for that. There's so much room for that in higher education. I think I would like to teach. I would like to be maybe adjunct faculty. I don't think I could be full-time faculty. That is a lot. Because I do love the administrative piece too, right? Like I like being able to work with students on kind of like a variety of platforms and seeing them develop in different types of ways. I definitely see myself getting another degree at some point, probably some form of a doctorate.
Lifelong student, baby.
I know. The learning just never stops.
Would love to see a little Professor Egbert action,
oh my gosh,
though.
I'm mad.
That would go crazy.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, I imagine myself getting some form of a doctorate, if nothing else, purely to just continue climbing the ladder, right? Like,
yeah.
That's just kind of a thing. But I love learning. I love being in school. I've been out of my grad program for 6 months now, and I'm like, still having, you know, panic attacks in the middle of the night because I didn't do a reading or I have an assignment due. And I'm like, no.
You're like, are there any volunteer classes I could simply take just to feel something?
Yeah, I need to feel the stress of not doing my homework again.
Yeah, right? No, real.
Nothing does it like the stress of that.
Nothing does it like a 10-page paper due in like 4 hours.
Yeah. And tell you what, my house was never cleaner than when I had that paper due that night.
True. Yep, true.
Anything to not write that paper.
No, you said it.
Yeah.
And you know what? I will say, you've given a lot of really great gems of advice throughout this whole episode, but I do want to ask if you have any specific piece of advice for young professionals who are listening or really just for anybody in our demographic.
No one knows what they're doing.
that part, no, actually.
No one knows what they're doing, right? Like, I recently turned 25, and I'm like, when do I start feeling like the adult in the room?
Yeah.
When I am.
I've been wondering that, too.
I am very exactly. much the adult in the room, like, yeah. often, like, a lot. Right. And, like, what I've learned is that no one fully is aware of what's going on, right? Like, no one ever wants to feel like a quote-unquote adult because there's always somebody above them. There's always someone else who's really, really in charge, right? And so I think just, like, understanding that, like, as long as you're doing what you can, like, fake it till you make it, right?
Real.
Like, your confidence is going to get you a long way. But part of that, and I think we talked about this earlier, was just knowing what you have to offer, right? Like, if you have a skill set that you know is valuable and you know how to work your skill set, you know what to do with it, apply for the job, take the interview, you know, start a new business, right? Like, if you feel like you can do it, if you think you have those skills, you do. You're the only one who actually knows that, though, right? And so you kind of have to own that power.
Yeah.
And I think that's what a lot of, like, young people are scared of is, like, oh, this job application, like, it wants, like, these qualifications, and it says that you have to have these experiences, right, blah, 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 blah. Okay, but if you think that you can do that job and you have relevant experiences somewhere else, as long as you can sell that, as long as you can attest to what your experiences are and how you think you can make that work for the position and make it better, why would they not hire you?
Yeah. Mic drop.
Right, we can just end it there.
No, literally. No, but they'll be sad without the Roman Empire.
I know.
I will say, I've been thinking about podcast titles throughout this whole episode, just like, you know, little bits and pieces mm-hmm. of your talking. And honestly, I think no one knows what they're doing with Jordan Egbert is the funniest thing ever.
Well, you know, like, that's like my life mantra, right? Like,
it's gotta be. I mean, it's so helpful.
Yeah. I moved, you know, I moved between middle school and high school. I started high school in a brand new place.
Right.
After that, I started undergrad. Immediately after undergrad, I went to grad school. While in grad school, I went to Rwanda, right? Like, and now I'm back in the Toledo area. Woot woot, love the 419.
So true.
But like, my life since I was 14 years old has been in a constant state of change, whether that's like physical change, moving places, personal emotional change of figuring out my sexuality, figuring out my gender identity, figuring out my career path, all of these things, right? Like, and I'm not alone in that, right? Like,
right.
So many people have been through exactly what I am or what I have gone through. And they just don't always know what that actually does for them, right? Like,
right.
When you start to get comfortable in that change and you start to get comfortable in the unknown, right? Like, thank you, Elsa from Frozen 2. into the unknown, right?
Like, so real.
Because what else are you going to do? Like, stay where you are and be miserable?
Right.
Okay,
no,
you make the wrong move. Maybe you're still miserable, but at least you're miserable in a different spot. Like, you tried something different.
So true.
Yeah, I'm going to start calling you for my pep talks. Like,
no, real.
I
was
going to
say, we
yeah.
both have this, like,
internal monologue,
yep,
like, every day.
Every week, so.
Literally.
Yeah, I was a motivational speaker in another life.
Period.
Or maybe this life later. Who knows?
Yeah.
I can't wait.
No one knows what they're doing.
No one knows. And that's okay. Who cares?
Right, exactly. And now we're back for everyone's favorite segment, the Roman Empire. Okay, so I think I'm going to be selfish and I'm going to kick it off today.
Okay.
Because I could not think of one, but now I have it. And it's because I had a little movie marathon last night and I watched all the Pirates of the Caribbean movies.
Yeah,
and let me tell you, I know, Libby, you're not partial to those, but I will say those movies are fire. They're fire. They're so good.
Top tier. Like,
exactly.
Some of Disney's best.
No, truly. And the fact that the ride came first before the movies always trips me up. I'm like, that's nuts. Because they literally just were like, okay, we'll just like create this movie. And then they added in the Jack Sparrow animatronic. Anyway, that's not my Roman Empire. What is my Roman Empire? Is in the second Pirates of the Caribbean film, Dead Man's Chest. What I love the most is when Will Turner meets his father for, I say the first time, but I guess like re-meets his dad since being separated in childhood. And it is the most beautiful cinematic scene. Like I was texting at least four or five people during that scene and texted each one of them individually and said, hold on, have to sit and watch this scene for a second. I'll get back with you. Like that is the way that you have been building up the whole first movie, that he's Will Turner and his dad's Bootstrap Bill, and you never know, like, who is Bootstrap Bill? And then you get to the second movie, and it's like, oh, that's Bootstrap Bill. Crazy. And then you know he's a character, and then they're on the same ship, but you're like, oh, are they going to meet? They're on the same ship. And then they meet, but they meet by a fluke because one of the other crew people, who, by the way, they all look really scary, is like, hey, Turner, do this thing on the deck, which I don't know pirate terminology, so I'm not gonna try. But then they both go to do it, and that's how they meet because both of their last names are Turner, and then they're like,
you're my dad, I'm your kid, crazy. And their relationship from there, just like the music in it, the buildup, it's beautiful. And that's my Roman Empire. Shamelessly self-promoting my Pirates of the Caribbean marathon. It's so fun.
I love that.
All right, Livia, let's kick it over to you.
Okay, so mine, it's kind of lame this week, but I have really been thinking about it a lot. Is that usually I'm such a Grinch when it's like this time of year and it's like starting to be Christmas and I'm just like, not yet, like it's not yet, not yet. And I always just push it back and push it back until it's too late. But this year I am trying my best to fully embrace the holiday cheer.
Oh, wow.
And that's it. I've just been thinking about Christmas and I'm just trying to be excited about snow. That's very hard for me.
That's
fair.
I
do not like the snow.
I don't really like the snow either.
But I am just really trying to get into the holiday festivities.
Well, did some ghosts recently visit you in your sleep?
Oh, no. I think you're right in that, like, everybody kind of glosses over Thanksgiving and, like, the fall cheer of November because they're like, Halloween, and then they're like, oh, Halloween's over. It's the holidays! And you're like, hey, wait.
Yeah, I hate it usually, but I'm like, I push and push and push until there's no time left to celebrate. Yeah. So I'm like, I'm just going all in. Let's embrace
it. I, on the other hand, agree with you mostly. And I will put some of the decorations up. But I also have a little Thanksgiving playlist with Adam Sandler's Thanksgiving song, the Bob's Burgers, okay, Pass the Cranberry Sauce.
Best banger. Absolutely best song.
I'll listen to that song every Thanksgiving. It's like 30 seconds long, but it's everything to me.
Like, who wants to come over and watch all of the Bob's Burger Thanksgiving episodes?
No, wait. That's like a great tradition to have.
Hey, what are you guys doing tonight? Not related. anyway, all right, Jordan, what's your Roman Empire?
Okay, I thought I had to think about it, and then I realized I did not have to think about it. I think, I know, the ocean. Just,
whoa.
But let me break it down, let me break it down.
Like, wait, specifically.
But more specifically, all of it, right? But also, Mariana's Trench.
Okay.
What do you mean?
What do you mean?
Okay. Because, like, okay, when they, whoever they are, I don't know, pirates, not pirates,
the
sailors.
The Pirates of the Caribbean.
The Pirates of the Caribbean.
It was actually them.
Captain Jack Sparrow.
When Captain Jack Sparrow was using straight up rope to, like, measure the depths of the ocean, okay, back when I guess they did that.
Yeah.
And they were like, whoa, this is a deep part, and just, like, used rope to guess how long that trench is, or, like, how deep the trench is. No. What?
Yeah, no.
But also, with that much, like, water, just, like, dead space water, right? You cannot convince me that the Megalodon does not still exist.
I actually really think the Meg exists.
Like, hot take. I know scientists want to say, like, ooh, you would tell because of, like, their eating patterns and this. And I don't care.
But we've only explored so little.
They say, like, what, like 5% of the ocean or
something like that?
Something
like that. It's crazy. Like, what is down there?
Like, we are more water than we are land.
Right.
Hello.
Well, and that's what's so interesting to me, too, is there's been this discourse on TikTok about aliens living in the water.
The octopi.
And then every single time, well, yes, I've seen about the octopi being
aliens.
They're
so smart. Why?
Right.
Because they're aliens.
Because they're aliens. But then I guess there's two parts to my little rant, because the first part is, is that why people invented, like, the myth of sirens and mermaids? Like, were they just aliens trying to mess with people? Maybe they had, like, mind control technology, and they weren't actually just luring people to the ocean.
Okay,
they just actually – okay, I'm not actually hopping on the conspiracy train. It's just something to think about.
Or
and
those
then,
things were just real.
Yeah, yeah. No, yeah.
I kind of believe in mermaids. So.
But also, no, truly, if the Little Mermaid taught me anything – no, I'm kidding. But at the same time, it's interesting to me because also if they're aliens but they live on Earth, are they really aliens or are they just Earthlings that live in the water?
All right, I don't need to hop on the conspiracy train, but I recently watched an Ancient Aliens episode on the History Channel, and they were talking about how we are the Martians. Like, humans actually came here from Mars. We're the aliens.
That's an episode in and of itself of this
wild
podcast,
right?
I fear. Like, we are the Martians.
Yeah.
Should we bring on, like, an alien expert?
Yeah, like, right?
Extraterrestrial, like.
We're like, hey, calling all Gen Z alien experts. Please come debunk. Anyway, well, Jordan, thank you so much for such a lively conversation.
You
are so wonderful.
Yeah,
so much great
so
advice.
Great. Oh, I don't know. It's just some stuff I said. I don't know what I'm doing.
We
We would like to thank Jordan Egbert, our guest on today's show. We're your hosts and producers, Libby and Riley, and our executive producer is the incomparable Chris Piper.
If you have any questions, comments, or you just want to listen again, go to WGTE.org/comeup or wherever you stream your podcast.
Bye, besties!
WGTE. Voices around us.
WGTE is supported in part by the American Rescue Plan Act funds, allocated by the City of Toledo and the Lucas County Commissioners, and administered by the Arts Commission.